0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Lifeline. And Joe at RT.ie. Orla, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe, how are you?
What happened?
Well, it was a lovely sunny Monday, and I was on the beach in Spittle, and just coming out of the beach, just at the water's edge, when I just felt a sharp pinch on my toe. And by the time I got back to where we were sitting, I was limping, and the toe was really, really sore. And it just progressively got worse. And within about 10 minutes, I was in agony, absolute excruciating pain. So,
And it was a weaver fish, a weaver stain.
I since found out it was a weaver fish. Yeah, what happened was I actually carried off the beach. I couldn't get up off the beach. And as we were, two ladies came along as we were standing at the car, loading up the car, and they recognised what had happened. And they told me it was a weaver fish. So I had never heard of a weaver fish before. But I suppose the reason I contacted you was just to raise awareness of it, because of how to overcome this pain and how to calm the foot down, because my foot was just unbelievably sore. Is the remedy is to put your foot into a bucket of very, very hot water.
Yeah, well, it happened to me.
Yes,
when I go into sea now, I always wear those little booties you can buy. It was a little red dot I spotted. I thought I'd stood on a bit of glass or something. Sat down, yeah. And I don't know if this was your experience, Orla, but the pain gradually moved up your leg. It was like you could feel a fluid or whatever, and the pain was excruciating. Excruciating. Now remember, I'm a man, of course. I have a lower pain. But while I was on the beach and people were trying to work out what happened, and two people came along, and it was a quiet enough beach. One person said, the only thing that would, it's a weaver sting, you need to get a lit cigarette and put it on the actual spot. That will get the sting out, which is pretty painful. And then another person arrived who was a nurse and said, I'm telling you, the pain is going to be worse than childbirth, which I doubt somehow or other. But she said that immerse your foot in as hot water as you can endure.
Well, that's what I did, but it took me 40 minutes to get to the bucket of hot water.
Yeah.
And as instant as the pain was, and you've described it exactly, the same thing happened to me. It progressed down through my foot, kind of halfway between your toes and your ankle. But my toe swelled up a bit, and I'm 3 weeks later, and my toe is still quite tender. But once I got as immediate as the sting was and as the pain was, the relief I got when I put my foot into the water as well was instant.
Well, 3 weeks later, my foot was still bandaged from burns.
Oh, right.
Because
okay.
I the pain was so awful. Mm. I had my foot in the basin, and I kept telling the people that were in the mobile with me, put more boiling water in, put anything in to try and get rid of the pain. You do anything.
Well, I'd have done anything. I mean, it brought me to my knees in such a short space of time. I just couldn't breathe through it. I just couldn't overcome this pain. And we drove. Unfortunately, the lifeguard, there was no lifeguard on duty. There was a lifeguard hut there, but there was no lifeguard on duty.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not it's not their job to deal with.
It's probably not, but I think they probably would have been able to tell me what happened anyway, and they may have had a bit of water, they may have had access to the kettle, but anyway, I just got into the gorge as fast as I could, into a friend's house close to Barna, and Larry and Caroline looked after me very, very well, and I spent the next, I'd say, 2 hours with my foot in the bucket and just replenishing the water with
it's an awful fright.
Boiling water.
Yeah, it is an awful fright. That stay there, Orla. Joe at RT.ie. Okay. Parik Hooley. Parik, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You say West Cork at the minute. West Cork beaches are infested with weaver fish.
Yeah, it's strong language, I know, but yeah. I mean, I've been swimming down here for, 18, 19 years, and up to about 5 years ago, I'd never heard of a weaver fish. And I'm involved in marine ecology and whales and dolphins. So I kind of had my finger on the pulse with what's happening in the sea, if you like. I stepped on my first one about 3 years ago. Last year, I stepped on more. This year, my very first, what I would call summer swim this year, which was in mid-May, I stepped on almost my first summer swim. I stepped on one. And since then, I mean, the simplest remedy is to pop down to any outdoor shop or Lidl and get a pair of booties for $3.99.
Yeah.
But definitely, it is a change. And, you know, you can't say, you know, that it's climate change or whatever. But, you know, our ocean is changing. And here we have a really good example of a change that is happening right in front of our eyes. I mean, you can't speak to anybody down here in West Cork without some family member or the individual themselves saying, oh, yeah, I got stung on Tuesday and my sister got stung on Wednesday and my children got stung
on
Friday.
And, Corrick, how many times have you been stung?
I would say I've been stung three times in the last 2 years, and I'm taking precautions now. So, like, anybody who spends any amount of time in the water down on West Cork beaches and is unprotected is going to get hit by a weaverfish.
Maybe you can explain this. You can't see the fish because it isn't the fish buried in the sand? Isn't that the problem?
That's right. They're like almost like a flounder or a plaice. They're just sitting below the sand, and no matter how carefully you're looking and how crystal clear the water is, you have zero chance, because all that's actually sticking out of the water is probably their dorsal fin, and it's that middle barb on their dorsal fin that is the delivery mechanism for that neurotoxin.
The fish, the weaver fish, I presume, thinks they're being attacked.
Yeah, it's a defense mechanism. The weaverfish isn't attacking us. We're actually, in effect, attacking them. And, I mean, I was just talking to a friend of mine who fishes, and he hunts for likes of sand eels before he goes fishing for bait. And he would say there are areas in West Cork at low tide when he's looking for sand eels where he is actually finding weaverfish in that wet sand almost, you know, every meter, every square meter.
Wow.
So if you walk across those stretches of beach, in particular at low tide, you're taking a really high risk of getting a bang off one of these small fish. And it should be said that they are a native fish. These aren't a tropical invasive species.
Yeah.
Weaver fish have always been there, but it does seem that, you know, our warming waters are actually creating local areas where they just seem to be exploding in numbers.
I was under the impression the weaver fish were originally found off the south coast of England, and they've moved. And well, we're not too far from the south coast of England, are we? But do you think there is an Irish fish?
I mean, and you know, the south coast of England. You know, a dolphin would swim off from between Cornwall and West Cork in a day swimming. So there's no distance at all between the sides. It's only 60, 70 miles away. But they are a native Irish species. These are not an invasive. An invasive tropical species coming up with climate change. They are native to Irish waters, but it's the numbers that seem to be on the increase, and in particular in sandy areas. So you could live in a beach like a shingle beach or a stone beach, and nobody's talking about weaver fish. It's the sandy beach, and in particular at low tide. And I think a little bit of signage from the councils would actually go a long way, because, you know, they set the precedent a couple of years ago when we started getting Portuguese men of war. And I don't know anybody who's ever got stung by a Portuguese man of war. And yet there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people stepping on weaver fish. So I think in terms of a public health message, a little bit of signage on these beaches where the lifeguards can say, yeah, God, we're getting weaver fish stings incidents every day.
And what do the lifeguards advise?
Well, everything that we've all said, really, there is no antidote to this toxin. What the boiling water, as hot as you can bear, does, it just dissipates the toxin.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you can rule out the next 2 hours, as your first speaker said, because you're in for 2 hours of hell.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, Johnny Woodlock, Johnny, you want to extend the warning to jellyfish?
Unfortunately, Joe, I missed most of the conversation.
Yeah, we were talking about weavers stood on weavers, yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, I mean, trawler men will tell you all about weavers as well. And a lot of anglers catch them and mistake them for small whiting because they look quite similar, apart from the dark dorsal fin, black dorsal fin.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've come across them in Donegal, and most surfers who might surf a sandy beach will be aware of them as well. That's why a lot of them wear the booties. But,
And are jellyfish, are there many jellyfish around at the moment?
The jellyfish is an interesting one at the moment because certainly off North County Dublin, I haven't seen any of the ones that would normally be the most common, which is the moon jelly, the one with the four clear one with four blue circles.
Right.
Now, they don't sting you, really. Their sting cells are not strong enough to get through your skin. But any jellyfish with colour in it, any jellyfish with colour in it will sting you. There's a lot of compass jellies around. And, of course, the lion's mane is the big red one.
And what's the antidote or what's the treatment?
For jellyfish, well, we have an expert kind of in the field here, Tom Doyle. He was UCC. He's now GMIT. Yeah. But recently he published a paper on Portuguese Man of War and peeing on it, which was the old remedy, won't do much.
All
right. The problem is that the stinging tentacles can break up, so you might just get hit by a very small piece. But sometimes you can get a bit wrapped around your foot.
Okay.
And they won't all go off at the same time. So if you apply fresh water to it, it causes them to fire off, which is why if you've been stung by a jellyfish and hop into a freshwater shower, it can feel like you've been stung again. But this is why they use vinegar. They found that vinegar is the best, thing to wash them off. Now, I have to admit that for me, if I get stung on the leg or something like that, I'll stand in the sea and use a bit of wet sand to rub the area.
Okay.
And this rubs off any unfired nematocysts and the stinging cells.
And just hope the weaver fish isn't hiding in that bit of sand and wiping the bit of the jellyfish off.
Well, if you wiping the thing can spread the stinging cells.
Okay, so
Tom Doyle's advice and the thing he's found with his own extensive studies on it is to wash the area with vinegar.
Vinegar, okay.
And then apply again heat.
You see, I know I mentioned it about the boiling kettle. I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, a friend of mine now, a surfer.
Don't do it.
No. A friend of mine who's a surfer stood on a weaver fish again in County Donegal. And managed to get back to the car park, but his heel was in agony. And there was a chap up there actually making a cup of tea from a thermos flask.
Right, okay.
And he got a cup of tea from him, and he managed to put his heel into the tea. As I think that was Patrick there, was it?
Yeah, maybe with a bit of milk in the tea.
Tom Doyle has found something over 45 degrees, I think, is the optimal temperature.
Will work, okay.
As I said earlier, basically water or something as hot as you can stand it will neutralise the immediate impact.
Stay there for a sec, Johnny. Rene Cusack. Rene, good afternoon. He's in Limerick. What happened to your son?
Joe, we were down in West Clare. And he got stood at a weaver fish, obviously.
Yeah.
And it was a Sunday, so there was very little open, and we were down in Dunbeg, it was fairly remote, he was surfing. So what I did was I got him into the car, I turned the heat up max, put it down in his feet. Now, it did take about an hour and a half for him to recover. Now, I don't know if there's different severity of things, but he was very, very sore at the time. But it did give him relief.
So he got into the car.
Correct.
And you turned on the heating full blast?
Yes, but down at his feet.
Down at his feet, okay.
So that you know, when you don't have hot water readily available to you, it was a solution.
And it doesn't damage the foot, I presume.
I ain't a doctor, Joe.
I know. But how was your son?
It was fine, but it was a couple of years ago now, but I'd say it took about half an hour before he recovered. The pain was gone.
Yeah, it's an excruciating pain. Thanks, Renee. Ina Clinton in Mullingar.
Hey, Joe.
Ina, what happened in your case?
Yeah, well, we were on holidays in Tramore. Now, it's a good few years ago.
Yeah.
Our daughter, I'd say she was about 10 at the time, and she was messing around in the sea, and the next thing she felt this sting in her foot, yeah. Or her big toe, I think it was. So the pain was excruciating, and she was crying and everything. So there was a first aid cabin on the beach. So we carried her up. She wasn't able to walk, so we carried her up to the station, and they took her in anyway, and they immersed the foot in very hot water. And as far as I can remember, they alternated it with cold water and then back to hot and cold for I don't know how long. It seemed a long time.
Well, apparently what Johnny is telling us there is correct. 40-40, you do not need boiling water like I use. Just use hot water. 40 yeah. to 45 degrees.
Yeah.
Apparently is the, and try and grin and bear it if your parents will give you a Panadol, take a Panadol or whatever. But it is an excruciating pain.
It is.
Pain
and it's excruciating. And
it's a frightening pain.
It's as if you got stuck with a knife or something.
Yeah, and it's going up through your leg. Thanks, Ina. It's Ina Mullingar. Anne, you want to describe the pain.
Yeah, I stood on a weaver fish up in Northern Ireland about 18 years ago. Okay. Well, no, about 16, 17 years ago. And first it's just this little pinprick, like you said. It feels like you stood on a thorn or a piece of glass. And then my toe was really painful. Then the pain went up to the ball of my foot. Yeah. You can actually feel it moving up your ankle, right up to as far as my knee. And I was trying to describe it to people. I was saying it was like someone had taken a lump hammer, smashed my shin open and poured boiling lead into the marrow of my bones. I mean, that's the level of it. I had a baby. I couldn't describe it when I finally got, because I couldn't drive, obviously, and somebody on the beach just drove me to the nearest doctor, and my family came afterwards. And I was shaking from head to toe. I couldn't breathe. I was like this, you know, unable to speak almost. And they were saying, they were saying, you know, they thought I was getting hysterical over some tiny little pinprick because they didn't know what it was at all, you know. And my partner at the time came in with my son, and I pointed at him. He was about two, and I said, "You see him? I was 3 days in labour with him. I would happily go through that again, rather than this." So they said, "Okay," and then they kind of swung into action. And but they had to give me an antihistamine. They had to give me an injection so that I could breathe properly again. I had a really bad reaction to it, and then I was waiting, and I said, "Is there any chance you could give me a painkiller?" Mm-hmm. They said, "We gave you an injection 20 minutes ago, really strong painkiller." I said, "Well, when's it going to kick in?" And they said, "Well, it should have kicked in, you know, within 10 minutes. It did not make a dent in it. So the solution, though, is so simple, it's practically magical. It's 50% boiling water, 50% cold water.
Okay.
So my advice to anybody would be, if someone stands on a weaver fish, just shout to the nearest person on the beach, run up to the nearest house and ask for a kettle of boiling water in a bucket or a basin, and then bring that back down to the beach, put half cold water in it, half boiling water, and get them to put their foot in it immediately.
Yeah.
Because the relief I got from that, 3 days later, it was my dad who looked it up online and said, "Oh, it's half boiling water." And 3 days later, I put my foot into it, and the relief I got
tremendous. What does the hot water do to the sting?
It cooks. It cooks. It's a neurotoxin, and it's actually a protein. So it cooks the protein inside in your foot, like cooking an egg white, which is quite fascinating. But I could actually feel in my foot something happening, you know, and I could feel the relief, you know. But the serious point I want to make is that I was so relieved that it was I who had stood on it, because I remember my last coherent thought. I looked down at the beautiful white sand and I saw these little tiny triangular black stones, and I thought, "Oh, look at those pretty little black stones," which of course is the weaver fish's dorsal fin, which is sticking out of the sand. I'd run a mile if I saw that again. I'd know what to look for. But that was my last thought, and then I just got this prick, and it injects it off into your foot, you know. But I had on one side of me my 2.5-year-old son, who was pre-speech, and on the other side his little cousin, who was about four, a really light little child. And I just thought, my God, if one of them had stood on it, particularly the one who couldn't speak, you would have a child screaming their head off, arching their back, looking like they were having a fit, and unable to tell you what has happened.
And you will not find that little. If the child cannot
tell you,
you
wouldn't find it. If the child had been waving their foot around, you would not even find it. Yeah. It was a tiny pinprick, and I could only find it because it was in my foot, and I could feel where it was. So, for anyone who has a child that suddenly freaks out on the beach, it's really good to know this is probably what has happened, you know, and to get that child's hand or foot or whatever part of their body into as hot water as you possibly can. And also, I mean, I would happily, if someone had given me a hatchet, I'd have cut my leg off it with me to get rid of that pain. I cannot even describe to you how bad it was.
That description of,
fully on top of it, you know, I really, it just injected right up into me. And as my mother will tell you, I have a very low pain threshold anyway.
But
you know, for a small kid, especially someone who maybe can't speak English or can't speak at all, you know, they could be in absolute agony and someone's going, oh, come on, don't make a fuss, it's only a pinprick, what's wrong with you, you know?
Well, they seem to be, take it seriously. I know, sorry, but I know it happened to you a few years ago, but this seems to be rampant. Like, this is another text, one of many I'm reading. We spent the week on Inishere, which is the Aran Islands, and a 10-year-old got stung by a weaver fish on Saturday. The only thing we could do was put his foot into hot water when we got back to the campsite, and my husband was able to get the venom out by pushing at the puncture site. But it's still, still sore today.
And because it's a neurotoxin, it makes your muscles move. And I was down looking at my toe. It was like I was possessed by I was zombified or something. My big toe was making the weirdest movements around in circles and bending and straightening out. I wasn't doing it at all. It was the neurotoxin kind of tightening and loosening your muscles.
In the current weather, I'm thinking of that poor goat down in Killorgan as I speak. But in the current hot weather, what part of the country are you in, Anne?
Oh, I'm down in Beara, and I recommend if you want to avoid weaver fish, come here because we have practically no beaches, so you can just swim safely off the rocks.
What's the weather like?
It's glorious. It looks like Greece. It's just fabulous. Well, it's down in my doorway now.
And the Killorgan isn't too far away from me. That's why I'm worried about the poor goat.
Well, but I'm glad to live here without any sandy beaches because I don't have to even think about weaver fish.
Oh, of course.
Off the rocks.
So if you put your foot on a hot rock, would that help?
Well, I don't know. I'd say water is a thing because it really is kind of cold. But he's of any kind. 50% boiling, 50% cold.
But don't put in full boiling water like I did.
Take the foot off yourself. I'd say really with kids, if kids starts to go completely berserk and you can't figure out what it is, that's probably what it is.
Okay, it's Vincent Highland. Thanks, Anne. Vincent Highland there before the break. Vincent, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How's it going? How are you?
You're an underwater camera. Likewise, you're an underwater cameraman. And you were stung by...
I've been stung by lots of jellyfish in my time filming underwater.
I thought you were going to tell me you were stung by a few film companies.
Oh, maybe that too as well, Joe, into the mix. Lots of things over decades of really filming. And in fact, taking up scuba diving in the mid-70s, then I always wore boots, so I never got stung by weaver fish. But plenty of people did at that time. And so it's not unusual. I'd say possibly there's a lot more people in the water nowadays. And as Paddy Cooley said, just go down and buy some boots. My son actually at one stage was stung by a jelly Portuguese man of war and collapsed on a beach and had to get treatment. So that was back in the early noughties, you know. But we just have to be more kind of vigilant and aware, I guess. For anybody who wants, I have a free kind of downloadable smartphone guide to jellyfish.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Address for that. Yeah, it's just dairynan.ie/jellyfish-guide. And you can download it to your phone and keep it there, and it shows you all the different types of jellyfish and then the severity of stings from each one. And then the treatment as recommended by the Irish Water Safety Group.
Maybe I'm trying to think. Everyone doesn't like even wearing those booties, but
yeah, that's true.
Maybe I think it's worth it to avoid that sting. Yeah, so is it Johnny?
Yeah, sorry. Just if I can say an important point to raise there is that quite a few people are allergic to the venom of boat weavers and jellyfish. So
you're not saying you could die.
It might be fairly minor to some people. I mean, I got a small sting on the hindquarters a few days ago, and within an hour it was gone. But yes, in my area in Skerries, quite a few people have taken during August and the like, when the lion's manes are in, they wear sting suits.
Oh God!
Which are basically all over nylon stockings.
Well, let's not forget how... I know you're not saying, but let's not forget how deeply invigorating getting into the sea is safely and enjoying the water. Nothing, there's nothing better to give you.
Well, I give everything. This morning now.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I hope to be in it the weekend. Okay, Vincent Hyde and Padraig Hooley, and Johnny Woodlock. Go to meet him at joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
You're not adjust your sets, but the next item could lead to serious diplomatic repercussions between Ireland and the UK. Grace Cudahy. Grace, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
First of all, well spotted. How did you how did you spot this grievous insult to the sovereignty of the Irish people and our nation, 100 years after the formation of the state?
Well, I was actually at a talk last week in a travel bookshop in London.
Oh, lovely.
And yeah, it was for the launch of a new book. So the book is actually called Small Island, 12 Maps That Explain British History.
Okay.
So it was a talk by the author, and he was going through the different maps in the book, you know, like the Roman Empire and Celtic Britain and all this kind of stuff. And he got to nearly the very end and he showed a map of all the members of the EU in 2015.
2015, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Ireland was just, there was just United Kingdom written over Ireland and the United Kingdom, yeah.
So, well, it's their last, well, I know that it took them a few years to get out. So if you, they have, this is a map, this is a book of maps about maps.
Yeah, it's a map. It's a book about maps.
And it's published by the very reputable company Penguin, who also have a major operation here in Ireland. But Penguin are saying in their book that in 2015, Ireland, the full island of Ireland, was part of the United Kingdom. Because when you look, we'll tweet it in a sec, it is an egregious insult. There's no two ways about it. The word United, it's the word United Kingdom, but the actual word United from that phrase, United Kingdom, begins down in Limerick and goes right across the country as far as Gowrie, and then the K begins in the middle of the Irish Sea, and we are part of the United Kingdom. Did you have the temerity, Grace? Or did you gather your forces before you raised this issue?
Oh, I did, of course, Joe. What do you think? I was outraged.
Good woman. And what did you say or what did you do? Or?
Well, there was a Q&A session afterwards and I put up my hand and I just said, look, I'm just wondering why you've left Ireland out of the map of the 2015 EU members.
Yeah.
You know, considering Ireland joined the EU in the same year and we've been EU members for longer now.
And considering your book is about maps.
Exactly. The book's about maps in a travel bookshop, you know. It was just mad. And he just kind of laughed it off, to be honest. He just said, like, oh, that's an example of a very English-centric attitude.
What?
And I thought to myself, well, it's not an English-centric attitude. You've actually just erased an entire country there, you know. I wasn't very happy. I wasn't satisfied at all, Joe, to be honest.
And this was the author.
This is the author, yeah. And, like, people in the audience, when I raised it, they were kind of laughing, you know? Like, it was funny. It's like, well, it's not funny at all.
So, this was, what's his name? Philip Parker, is that his name?
Philip Parker, yeah.
Okay. It's called 12, Small Island, 12 Maps That Explain the History of Britain. And they get to 215, and it's clearly United. Ireland, there's not even, it's not that the word United obscures era or the Republic of Ireland underneath it, or Ireland. Ireland doesn't even get a mention. Netherlands, Sweden, Finland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Austria, Hungary, Slovenia, Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria, Italy, Malta, Greece, Cyprus, Spain, Portugal, France, Luxembourg. They all get, and United Kingdom get their individual mention. But there is the island of Ireland, which is pretty big on the map. And now we got on to Penguin, and we got a more considered reply, I think. And they say, they're called Penguin Michael Joseph, or is it Michael Joseph? Anyway, thank you for making us aware of the error, Grace, which we apologise for. We've included a statement from Penguin Michael Joseph as publisher and Philip Parker if you wish to use them. A map within Small Ireland, focusing on Britain in the European Union 215, mistakenly dropped the country name of Ireland from the final files. We're sorry for this mistake, which happened between proofs when the layout of the map was adjusted to increase legibility. Human error does regrettably creep into publishing on very rare occasions, and we have immediately corrected our files to depict the map as it was originally intended. All future reprints, they're not going to put an erratum into the, you know the way sometimes they stick a little, you get a little piece of paper saying page 54 should read, whatever. All future reprints will include the correct version. From Philip Parker, the type on this map has been clearly missed, this is the author, has been, so we can't really blame him, but how somebody didn't spot this glaring error? It's not as if the word Francis in a text was misspelled as E rather than I for whatever gender you're involved. Philip Parker, the type of this map has been clearly misplaced to wrongly imply that Ireland forms part of the United Kingdom. This is very regrettable and will be corrected at the first possible opportunity, Grace.
It's certainly regrettable, all right. Now he turns it again, you see.
It certainly shows how maps can be used to misrepresent as well as portray historical developments, and how the sensitivities regarding border changes and the border of Ireland in particular should be respected. So he's almost saying, well, it was a mistake, but I am kind of making the point that maps cause wars, borders cause war, misrepresentation. Is this the first time you've seen people forget about Ireland? They've forgotten about us.
I mean, I've lived here now for nearly 4 years, and it's definitely not the first time, but it's the first time I've seen it in a newly published book that was presumably checked by numerous people, you'd have to assume.
It jumps, the mistake, I won't, we'll leave it at that, but the mistake jumps out.
It does. I noticed this straight away, obviously, you would.
Yeah, United Kingdom. And now I know they've no obligation, but I wonder, what is a book on sale here? And did anyone in Penguin Ireland, who have a very great reputation here, did anyone in Penguin Ireland spot it? They must be mortified. And they must be saying to their bosses in Penguin, are we going to get the same pay as people in the United Kingdom? Because according to you, we are part of. Will we get the same lower tax rates that you have in the United Kingdom? Because according to your map, we are part of. Can we get the same NHS treatment in Ireland? Because according to you, we are part of the United Kingdom. I'd say the answer would be a glaring no. Well spotted, Grace. And by the way, why did you go? You were interested in it, were you?
They do talks like every week in that bookshop, right. And I just went along. This is the first time something like this has come up now, I have to say.
But isn't that the great thing about London? There's so much on.
Yeah, there is. There's always something on.
And it's with their tube system and their bus systems easy to get around. I was in London recently and I couldn't get over the dirt and the filth of the place, the litter. I just could not get over it. And people give out about Dublin. Dublin is the floor of a surgery. It's so clean compared to London. Anyway, Grace, well spotted. Do you accept the is it an apology? Let's see. Can I find the word sorry? Will I, Grace?
I mean, it's a bit of a non-apology.
Thank you for making us aware of this error, Grace, which we apologise for.
Yeah.
Now, if we go
but
down...
That was the publisher, not
that's
the
publisher. Well, let's read Mr. Parker's. The type of this map has been clearly misplaced, the wrongly implied Ireland forms part of the UK. This is very regrettable.
Very regrettable.
And will be corrected at the first possible opportunity. They should put a note in the books that are on the shelves now. It certainly shows how maps can be used to represent as well as portray historical developments, and how the sensitivities... Grace, regarding border changes and the border of Ireland in particular should be respected. But there's no apology. But anyway, well spotted.
Thanks very much.
Okay, what are you doing in London?
I've been here for 4 years now. I'm working in insurance research.
Oh, insurance research?
Yeah.
Well, what's that, risk assessment? And?
No, I work for a company that writes reports about insurance all over the world, basically.
Oh, well done. Well done, Grace. Yeah. Well done. Okay, thanks indeed. That's Grace Cudahy. Well spotted.
Thanks very much,
We have our agents everywhere, Grace. Thank you indeed. The Irish, Grace is a member of the Irish Secret Service now, going to spot insults against our sovereign nation and just the centenary of our foundation. It's just not acceptable. It's just not acceptable. Back after this break, while I compose myself, this is...
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
See, we hope to speak to him in the next few minutes. But Patrick O'Reilly was mentioned yesterday on the programme when we were speaking to Suzanne McDougall, who was one of the many people upset about the fact that the goat was going to be hoisted into the air in a couple of hours' time down in Killorglin. And you heard our earlier caller there, was it Anne? In down in the Beara Peninsula. What a beautiful spot. But she said it's scorching down there. And Suzanne McDougall said, why doesn't someone make a lovely sculpture of the goat? And she and I both mentioned Patrick O'Reilly. And he's phoned in to say he will make a sculpture of the goat for Killorglin if they just take it down. And he's won many awards. But anyway, we'll probably speak to him in a few minutes if he's still available. George Boyle. George, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
And what happened?
So I'm in Rosslare at the moment.
Okay.
I'm working from a different kind of home, a mobile home.
Great.
And it is very, very beautiful here.
Yeah.
And the sea is like something you get off, yes, the coast of Greece or the
turquoise,
Maldives.
Turquoise.
Really, really clear, lovely.
Yeah.
And my 12-year-old daughter and my 15-year-old daughter were swimming with their pals last week, and they'd only just really gone down, so I was very surprised to see them coming back, just my two daughters. And the older one was practically carrying Sienna, my 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised to see Sienna like in so much pain, because
yeah.
she's a very high pain threshold. She has a condition that means she has to get a lot of procedures done regularly, so she's no stranger to pain. So she came in, and they thought she'd been bitten by a crab. That was their kind of assessment of it. But I looked at it, and I instantly knew that wasn't a crab bite. There was no bruise, there was no pinching, there was no piercing of the skin. But and there didn't seem to be even a penetration point. I didn't know what it was. But I'd seen something about the weaverfish, and so I looked up the RNLI, and there's also a Facebook page called the National Poisons Information Service. I don't know what it's called exactly, but it's, the two of them had good information about this hot water thing, and I live in a wonderfully... solidarity-centred community here in Rosslare of people who are always aware of what's going on. So one of my other friends, she came over, and her daughter was in the Algarve, and she's in her 20s, and she had literally just stepped on one the day before and was howling in pain with it. And as she was heading home with her friend, they passed a fire station.
Okay.
And the firemen came out, and I'd say that was very exciting for them. And they brought them in, and they put bleach on it. Now, I didn't know how much bleach they put on it, but it was very surprising to hear that they put bleach on it. And in the same way that I'd be very surprised to have anyone say put boiling water on it. So I kind of had a little think about that. And she said it was instantly, the pain got less. So I basically put a half a capful of bleach in with the in with the hot water that I had immersed her foot in. I mean, it wasn't boiling. I mean, I had a horse flybite years ago where they put boiling water, and I ended up with big scalded blisters on top of the horse flybite.
Good God.
So it
Good
doesn't
God.
Help. But, yeah, so the heat really helped to take the pain away. But, I mean, when her foot was in front of me before I did anything, it was swelling visibly. Like, I mean, you could actually see it swelling, and there were kind of little blisters forming. It was really hot to the touch. She says it was like stepping on glass or stepping on a piece of really sharp shell, you know. That was the first hit of it, but then the pain was just really, really agonizing as it was going through her system. So I just saturated a rag with the hot water with a tiny bit of bleach in it and wrapped it, and then I kind of refreshed it every 10 minutes. And when I eventually took it off, I sent photos to your team there of it before and after. And afterwards, it had completely gone down, and it had gone from bright red and hot to cool and white. And you can see these little white tracks of the venom as it was going through her skin.
God,
you know,
God.
Yeah, big fat kind of knotty curls of squiggly lines going through her heel into the arch of her foot and up into her leg. And then it kind of petered out, obviously, because of the heat. And I was really fascinated to hear your friend saying that it cooks it, because sure, that's what you do with nettles, you know, you cook them and they don't sting you anymore.
Okay. Good description, George. Thanks indeed. It's Peter Dornan. Peter, good afternoon.
Yo, how are you, Kevin? How's everything with you?
Oh, good, yeah. You've never been stung, but...
No, Joe, I've never been stung, and I've been going to Achill Island for the last 26 years.
Okay.
Every summer, religiously, for 2 to 3 weeks, on Keel Sandy Banks, the caravan park, only stone's throw from the beach. Spend all the 2 weeks in the water, surfing, bodyboarding, kayaking, the whole lot, yahooing around the place. And from day one, we were warned about weaver fish.
Okay.
So myself, my son, and all our friends, all of us wore wetsuits and we wore booties in the water. Now, what I noticed happening this year was, and one of the people that rents out surfboards there was telling me, a lot of people have gotten stung in the hands, where they slip off the bodyboard and they put their hand into the sand and they're putting it onto the weaver fish itself and they're getting stung that way.
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, but I was looking there one of the days and there was a young child. I say the child was 6, and that was it. Brought up to the lifeguard station, screaming in pain. And the child was in an ordinary swimsuit, Joe. You know, so, I mean, a little bit of common sense. That's all. Put them into a wetsuit. It'll also help with insulation and keep them warm in the water. Stick a pair of booties on their feet, and that'll solve an awful lot of problems.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Joe, the wetsuits and the booties, they're going for dirt. Dunstores have a big sale. The wife was in there today. They have a big sale. They're selling off wetsuits for little or nothing. So this equipment is not expensive. Or it is a good aid to preventing the stinging of the weaver fish, because they are there. That's just reality.
Say, listen, Peter, because there's a chap saying that, well, he's in Tony Morgan in Lipton's in Clonus in County Mon. And Tony, you're saying there's such a thing as an anti-venom kit.
Yes, so we have an anti-venom set here. We actually cleared them in our 30th anniversary sale. At 30 cent each, but I found another half a dozen there, and it is a compact vacuum pump that can be operated one hand, and it can be used to give first aid in case of serious incidents, like stings and whatever like that there.
And what you place it on the sting, the location.
Yeah.
And you pump it.
You pump it. It creates a vacuum and pulls the venom out.
Okay, and does it work?
I don't know. I have no idea. Well, we've had them for a number of years.
Yeah, but there's no weaver fish up in Clonus. You're your landlocked.
You can still get a sting. Anyway. Maybe that's why we didn't sell them.
What were people buying them for, Tony?
Well, the reason they were buying them for 30 cents, I think that's why they were buying them, just because we hadn't sold them previously.
Oh, you were clearing?
We're clearing them at 30 cents for our 30th anniversary sale.
Okay.
We've had them for years.
Yeah, but what did you buy them for? Was there an outbreak of horsefly bites, or?
No, we just like to have everything in here. Whatever we pick up the most unusual things.
Okay,
we actually sold off 27 baths, 30 cents that were legacy that were in the shop here when we came here.
27 what?
Baths.
As in?
As in what you wash yourself in. So that was a big draw.
And where did you store them for years?
There was
in the bathroom.
Shop in the back of this shop. In the bathroom, yeah. And we decided 30 cents, get rid of them. So they're not a line that we'd be carrying anyway.
Okay. I never thought every parent going to the beach should have an anti-venom kit, a thermos flask with boiling water, 20 cigarettes and a box of matches so you can light them. To put, anyway... And above all, a pair of booties. Okay, Tony, how's your 30th anniversary sale going?
Oh, it went really, it was really over a week. It went really, really well. It was unbelievable.
Okay. And how long have you been there?
We've actually only been in this shop 2 years, but I've been in Clonus 30 years.
Good man. And you've been there every single day, Tony?
Almost.
I know that. You're a great reputation, great shop. It's called, why do you still call it Lipton's?
Lipton's, it was an old Lipton shop, and we just took the name with us. It was like we 15,000 followers on Facebook and that, and it was just too much to change the name.
But you remember, there was a whole worldwide chain of Lipton's, Lipton's Tea, Lipton's. There was one in Ballyfermot, but Lipton's, it was the biggest supermarket at the time. Lipton, is that where the name came from?
Yeah, the family are actually from just outside Clonus. There's actually a burial plot, Lipton's burial plot in the Church of Ireland here. And Thomas Lipton emigrated, his parents emigrated during the war. During the famine.
And they set up this incredible chain.
But the name's still,
you can still buy Lipton's iced tea, I presume it's...
They didn't
send our legal people after you, no?
Not yet.
Well, they will now. It's all the hornets out of the nest now. Okay, Tony. Happy 30th. You're a great shop, and you're a great all our local shops are a great tradition. And I know a lot of them are Centra and Mace and Londis and Spar, but they're a great service to the community. They really are, especially during the pandemic. Okay, Tony. Good to meet you, Tony Morgan above there in Monaghan. Where's Patrick O'Reilly? Patrick, the well-known sculptor. Patrick, how are you? Are you there, Patrick? I don't hear any noises in the background. Patrick, are you... Okay, now he's gone. We'll talk to him later. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, and a warning that the next subject is a very difficult subject, especially for younger ears, but it should be. And will be spoken about, because we spoke about it before on this programme, when we spoke to Marion Leonard before, and we spoke to Esther before. In 1992, a man called Frank McCann, who's in prison, he's now 62, he murdered his wife, Esther, who's Marion's sister, and he murdered their 18-month-old Jessica, who the McCanns were planning to adopt. And McCann, who was a swimming coach in the same era, by the way, as George Gibney and Derry O'Rourke, and looks like Gibney, one of them was reported to McCann, but McCann covered it all up. It was discovered in the adoption process that McCann had fathered a child with a 17-year-old young swimmer, and he wanted to eradicate his wife and the daughter they hoped to adopt, and that's what he did by setting the house on fire. It's horrific. Now, there's been a development in the case. Marion Leonard. Marion, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
What is the development, Marion?
Well, I suppose the most recent development, Joe, is that McCann is due to come before the new statutory parole board by the end of the year, which means changes in procedures and changes in the conditions in which we present submissions to the board, and he presents submissions to the board.
And he's allowed to see your submissions?
Well, he always was.
He always was. Okay. Yeah. Now, he was spotted in O'Connell Street recently.
Since the middle of June, he's been out on dawn till dusk release without any restrictions, other than a suggestion that he stays around the Dublin 2 area. And he's been going down to, I think it's called a job centre type place in Pier Street, and basically out and about.
He's been released from Arbour Hill. Is it Arbour Hill prison he's in?
He was moved from Arbour Hill, Joe. After the last time we spoke, he was teased apparently in Arbour Hill by some of the inmates, and he threw a tantrum, locked himself into the cell, and then he was moved to the progression unit in Mountjoy. So he's walking out now from Mountjoy around the city for the past month.
And then Conor Feehan, as per usual, had an incredible scoop in the Evening Herald. I'm surprised I didn't get more coverage of McCann walking up through Parnell Square. He hasn't aged, has he?
He's as big and as strong and as athletic looking, really, as he ever was. Menacing looking, and certain to me anyway, and threatening, but you wouldn't notice him walking around the streets.
Yeah.
Well,
were you told that he was going to get day release?
We were told he was going to get day release. Yeah, the prison services are very good about keeping us in touch whenever he's been left out. Prior to this, we probably would have known where he was going to, as in the last time that Connor followed him to Ballyfermot.
Yeah.
So we'd know he was going somewhere in particular. But this time it just seemed to be wherever he wants to go. He's just out without restrictions, is what we were told.
He's out without restrictions?
Without restrictions, on dawn till dusk releases.
And did they say to you, well, he's been in prison for, what, 30 years? Well, less than 30 as it happens, but between trials and whatever. Do they say that, well, then, can we not, you know, he got two life sentences, such as the horror of what he did, premeditated, then he tried to cover it up and... Then he made some ghastly, ghastly jokes about it to family members.
Yeah.
Do you accept that he will eventually get released, Marion?
We're getting there with accepting it, Joe. But the effect of on that happening to our family and the McCann family and extended friends will be that we'll be looking over our shoulders.
Will you be?
Well,
are you in fear of him?
Yes.
Why? Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody knows what he's capable of. Well, we know what he's done, but what he's capable of going forward. We don't know what's in his mind. I know when I was talking to you before, when Bernard, his brother, came on, Bernard is also in fear of his own life because McCann threatened him. And
Bernard, who's Frank McCann's brother, was the first member of that side of the family ever to speak. And he phoned Liveline that day you were on, and he said he doesn't want him out either.
Yeah.
They were in fear of him.
Yeah.
That's my recollection.
And you also spoke to his sister-in-law, to Elizabeth, who equally fears him coming out. We don't know what's in his mind. I mean, I've certainly been a thorn in his side for a number of years. And if he has any thoughts of revenge on... Mm-hmm. my family or in the McCann family, we don't know. There's no predicting it.
The only thing I heard from a prison source after the last time you were on is that, and you've enunciated it there, that McCann was extraordinarily upset that this had been brought up again on Liveline and had a protest in Arbor Hill because people were obviously not aware of what he did and was very, very upset by the coverage.
And that, Joe, makes it so unpredictable. He can be a model prisoner as long as everything is in line for him. But, you know, the fact that he was upset by me speaking to you and then within a confined environment throw a tantrum that, in effect, threw the prison out of sync. And again, my daughter Esther was on the programme with the guards, the case I can't forget, Christmas time. And again, the same thing in Mountjoy. He was very annoyed and did the same thing, refused to do his duties or his works and locked himself in again.
And what, Marion, what's your memories of him? Was he always childish and immature? And
he was always controlled, Joe. He was never childish and immature. He was always controlled. Okay. He was always in control. No, very calculating, very organised, very disciplined. And I would think he probably is that way in the prisons until someone upsets him.
And his to carry out the crime he carried out is beyond belief what he did.
And the fact that he tried a few times before he actually succeeded in killing them.
Didn't he try and foment a gas leak in the house at one stage?
There was a major gas leak in July before he actually succeeded in killing Esther and Jessica. And every time he attempted to kill them both. It wasn't accidental that Jessica was in the house.
Good God. Good God. But again, will the parole board not say he's done 30 years? He's 62. 62 is still very young.
Joe, my contention is that in England, whole life means whole life, especially for somebody who's killed a child. And I know it sounds awful to say I'm leaving my sister Esther out of this, but for someone who kills a child, whole life should mean whole life.
Yeah. There are, you're right, there are all the, what was it, with the Wayne Cousins, the policeman who murdered Sarah Everard.
Yes.
He's got a whole life. He's appealed against it, and the appeal has been torn down. He will stay in that prison for the rest of his, in prison for the rest of his natural life.
Yeah.
For what he did.
Which seems like justice for the family. It doesn't bring Sarah back, but it does seem like justice.
What age would Esther be now?
Esther would be 66 now. And Jessica would be 32.
Oh, my God. A child. Esther Leonard, who's Marion's daughter. Esther, good afternoon. I know you're 38. How are you, Esther? And you were, what, 7 or 8 when all this happened? Were you aware of what was happening, this incredible evil that had visited your family?
I absolutely. Look, when, you know, I remember very clearly the kind of morning that we were told, early hours of the morning that we were told what had happened. And, you know, that's a memory that I will live with my whole life, you know, and my hearing my granny wailing downstairs and hugging my then dying brother. You know, my brother was in treatment for cancer at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just as a family, just holding each other tight, but just being in such shock that something like that, something so horrific and awful, could have happened. But really, you know, everything up to that had been about my brother. Like, my brother was diagnosed with cancer when he was 16, and, you know, died when he was 18. And Frank McCann stole the last few months of his life. You know, my brother ended up having to live with all of this tragedy and awfulness in the last few months of his life. When you're talking cold and calculating, there was so much that he did that was just completely inhuman and unthinkable.
Marion, is there a possibility that you could bump into him?
Absolutely.
There is, okay.
Yeah. He will be out on license, Joan, as you probably know. He can't leave the country.
Yeah.
And I can't see him tucking himself away in a cottage in Donegal or somewhere out of our lives. He'll be around the city. He's entitled to council social housing.
Yeah. And do we know, and it's not for you to know, you have enough burdens, but did he never apologised, I presume? Did he ever?
He never expressed any, either remorse, apologised.
Or guilt.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And did he better himself in prison, do we know?
He took on quite a few computer courses, and he certainly got through the Open University to degree stage and has been upskilling. That's a while ago, so I'd say he's been updating his skills in recent
and
times.
And do we know what he's doing every day when he's free?
I only know that he's going down to, I might be getting this wrong, I think it's Trasna, the place is called, that they go. And it's probably, you know, for, if I say regular prisoners who need help and who have had hard upbringings and maybe not a lot of education, it's one of those type of employment places. Again, I just find it so hard to think that McCann would fit the criteria of the reasoning behind these facilities.
Well, I think one of the things that you would always look for, and going back to a previous life, is that the person looking for, what's the word, favourable treatment or relaxed treatment would show some remorse for the crime. But he doesn't even admit the crime.
No, he doesn't. And I just can't envisage him. He never did show remorse. I mean, he was quite in our faces through those years, or through those weeks in the during the trial. He, you know, insisted that his handcuffs be taken off, that he wouldn't be looked at as guilty when we were walking around the rotunda in the forecourts.
And then I don't know whether it was intentional or not, but that the smirk on his face when he was being led away.
Yeah.
Now he could argue that. Do you think that was intentional?
Yes, I do think it was intentional. Yeah, okay. And I think it was aimed at some of the fantastic policemen that were looking after us in particular.
But, Yeah, what was the best way of describing the smirk? An arrogant smirk.
Malevolent.
Malevolent, yeah. You better command the language than I have, and you unfortunately you have more experience of malevolence than I have. So, Marion, you won't let up.
I won't let up, Joe.
Okay.
And it's a very sad thing to say that, you know, you're there talking to my daughter Esther now as well. It's not a legacy you want to hand on to your family, but, I mean, it is our legacy that he gave us. Or just something that we have to keep safe, try and keep the family safe and keep other people safe.
So I know what you're saying, that, and you're young as well, Marion, but you're adamant that as long as Frank McCann is around, people will not forget his crime.
No, and they need to be afraid of him.
You're very strong on that. Why would he? Of course,
Joe. Who could have envisaged that someone would solve an issue of adoption by killing his wife and child?
Yeah.
And if he had known my sister, he could have spoken to her. They'd have come to a resolution. She was the most forgiving person in the world. She was so open-minded. You know, it's crazy to think that he had to kill a child to hide his own, I say indiscretions, but I don't think that's the right word for that. But
you're right. But okay, let's come at it another way. McCann, if Esther had found out, McCann hadn't committed a crime.
No.
He had broken his marriage vows or whatever, and
he'd broken the rules within the swimming association.
Within the swimming organization.
Which was more important than his marriage vows.
Was he?
I would have to assume.
Yeah. But he still murdered two people to try and hide it. What lunacy.
Yes, to preserve his image.
Yeah. Okay, Marion, You've incredible fortitude. I know it's your dear sister Esther, and I'm sure I know, and because I've spoken to you a few times now, not a day, not a minute, not an hour goes by when you don't think of her and Jessica. But you're incredible. You have incredible fortitude and obviously incredible love for Esther, both Esther, your sister, and Esther, your daughter now, and Esther, young Esther, I'm talking to you now, so to speak. Esther, you have vowed to carry on the campaign.
Absolutely. My aunt was so important to me and to us as a family. You know, she lived with us. We saw her every single day. She was an integral part of our family, and to fight for her memory and for Jessica's memory it's the right thing to do, and it's what we have to do as a family.
Okay. Esther Leonard and Marion Leonard, and above all, remembering Esther. I don't want to call her senior, but just to differentiate, Esther, who would be 66 today and still be alive, except for the actions of this man that she married, who murdered her and the child, the both innocent people, the 18-month-old baby that they were hoping to adopt to hide his own awful indiscretions. Esther Leonard, thanks indeed, and Marion Leonard, thank you both, and we'll keep in touch. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The sculptor Patrick O'Reilly is with us now. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for having me on your show.
And thank you for contact. You say you will make a sculpture of the goat in Killorgan. Well, the real goat is going up in the air in about 2 hours' time for the next 3 days. He'll be down on Friday evening if he's not roasted in the meantime. Well, by the way, what do you think of the goat up in the air?
Oh, I think it's a disgrace. My wife is passionate about animals as I am, and Jerry, we keep rescue animals in hosts, including goats.
I didn't know that.
So I know a little bit about them. And strange enough, they herd normally with the donkeys, but you won't see sign of the goat today. He'll be hiding in the shed, even though the donkeys will be outside. So they're very sensitive to the heat, but sensitive to people. They're very intelligent, sensitive animals. And I've heard the argument yesterday, you know, about on your show about your tradition Mm-hmm. And I just felt there's so many traditions using animals which have happily gone by the wayside of dog fighting, cock fighting, badger baiting. And so many of those have gone by the wayside. So that's a tradition that I think it would set such an example if Killorgan said we will stop just this part of the festival and replace it perhaps with something else. It would give such an example to the world. It would say this town in Ireland has stopped this ancient tradition and they're going to replace it. They're not going to terrorize an innocent wild goat and who doesn't want to be there. I know they say they're going to put a fan in today which will terrorize them all the more. And things can, they can adapt. People thought circuses would die when they stopped using live animals, but they find other ways and they're prospering. And I think it would give such an example to the world if, as because Ireland, which is universally loved everywhere, to say that this town has stopped using this particular part of the festival and not to have respect and giving dignity, not just to this goat. Because the people say, well, it's just one goat and there's thousands of animals and there's so much harm going on to animals everywhere. But this particular goat is as an example to all the other goats, or just having respect for the dignity of animals generally. Mm-hmm. And we give respect now to animals and minorities. And it's only by giving respect to animals, I think we're starting to believe that's how we start to give respect to each other. And I would, even though it's a small thing, when I heard your program last night, I remember that Emily Dickinson poem, "If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life from the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin onto its nest again, I shall not live in vain." It's just by helping one innocent tiny goat that we can give a universal message for the respective animals, which we're renowned for here in Ireland. And this would give, because if this happened in the city, Birmingham is probably a population in the greater area similar to Ireland. If it happened there, it may not have the same effect. But if the people in Killorgan decided to do it, it would be taken up by the media worldwide. And it would be so good for the image of Ireland internationally. Mm. I think Guinness, who are supporting this, would say, yeah, this is it won't be bad for business. I think it would be quite good for business. A lot of people, I think the minority that some the organisers may feel who are against this are a minority. In fact, I don't know that they are. I think everybody, it's not everybody has respect for animals, whether they keep animals or not, or whether they're lovers of animals. The people realize now the importance of having respect for animals. And I think that would send such a message for the that what Ireland has for the respect of animals. Mm-hmm. And especially a wild animal. Of course he's terrorized. Whether they're going to put, you know, a shower on him today, or this is all more ways to terrorize.
They're talking about a fan or something. Or
a fan. This is,
they throw water on him or something. Up,
no, it's just degrading to the dignity of the goat. And if we stop that and say we're out of this tradition, times have moved on, and all the traditions that we had with animals, which have gone by the wayside, and this is probably the last one in Ireland, and I think it would send such a mark. And if I know Suzanne mentioned yesterday about having a sculpture, I would be happy to, I would do my end of it at least, say, we could put a really beautiful goat sitting up on a throne, we could finish him in gold, he could be with a cape, with a crown, you could have a spectacular thing there, rather than just terrorizing this poor goat.
Well, and you're famous beyond these shores as well for your, what would we call them? Your laughing teddy bears, your moving teddy bears.
Yeah. I do a lot of animals and bears. Doing the bears, when you read about, it was a tradition, even in Ireland, but especially abroad, of dancing bears. Yeah. Which was a horrific part of the bears.
That's how people would know you. I'm over time at this stage. But Patrick, that's a fine offer. I'm also, if you want to see Patrick, yeah, the president of the Puck Fair is there. Declan Maher, Declan, good afternoon. briefly.
Hello, Joe. I just want to confirm that everything is going ahead as usual at Puck Fair.
Okay.
And everything is being supervised by Olvet.
Okay.
And we'll follow any instructions that he gives.
Would you accept it? Would you accept a sculpture if Guinness...
Come to Puck Fair.
Okay, bye-bye. If you want to see real art, go down to Patrick O'Reilly's sculpture, which is outside the Cafe Bar H there in Grand Canal Dock. It's fantastic. Apologies to Catherine Thomas, who's next. Brendan Donoghue is there, is produced.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.